Okay, thanks. So in the next 15 minutes, I wanted to share with you some of our work on the phosphorus index in New York, and particularly the feedback from the planners that we're working with to evaluate the performance of our phosphorus index and propose a new version of the New York phosphorus index with the ultimate goal of getting you guys to give us feedback before we stand in front of our stakeholder audience with bulletproof vests trying to survive this process. I want to start out with a quick update on what our current phosphorus index looks like, talk about the planner feedback to the performance of the P index over the last 15 years almost now, show you a couple of data slides on what we have gathered from feedback from planner data files and the structure then of the proposed phosphorus index. So here's in a very brief overview, our current phosphorus index, introduced in 2001, we start with identifying phosphorus sources. Soil test P, manure and fertilizer, rate, timing, and method come into place. And we multiply that times a factor between 0 and 1 for dissolved transport driven by soil drainage class, flow distances, stream, and flooding frequency to get a dissolved phosphorus index score. And we also multiply the source scores times a particular transport score that incorporates erosion, flow distance to stream, flooding frequency, and concentrated flow. So we get two scores per field for every farm that is required to do a nutrient management plan. Dissolved P, particulate P. We use those scores and we look at the interpretations here, and this is a table that we're using. If either one of these scores is over 100, the fields get classified as having a very high P index score, and consequence of that is that no more phosphorus can be applied. If it's between 75 and 100, phosphorus applications can be done up to phosphorus removal on an annual basis, and if it's less than that, it is nitrogen-based management. So this is the phosphorus index that was introduced back in 2001 that we've been running with. There have been no modifications whatsoever to this phosphorus index over the past 15 years. So we now have 15 years of experience running this in the field. Thanks to our Chesapeake Bay Watershed CIG grant, we were able to sort of take a step back and reevaluate, and then hopefully take a few steps forward and come up with something improved in the near future. What we started doing here for us in New York particularly was start a dialogue with our planners, the certified nutrient management planners. We wanted to do a survey with them and ask them for their feedback on this phosphorus index the way it was, what gets them into trouble with regard to runoff issues, what drives particular risky management, and what would they suggest we do differently in the next version. We also worked with the planners to get databases to us, so we have now a database of over 33,000 fields in New York with the phosphorus index scores that we can play around with. Then we wanted to evaluate how well the phosphorus index predicts the relative risk for phosphorus losses, work ongoing with our modelers in the CIG grant, refine the P index with planner input, and that's where we're at right now. We use the survey findings to revise a P index, come up with a proposal, and then work with the stakeholders to get their feedback. And then once we have something that we think we can work with, we have the 33,000 fields to evaluate what the impact is. So a process that has multiple aspects to it, trying to reevaluate the phosphorus index. So planner feedback. We asked the planners what the main reasons were for water quality violations that they were familiar with. And the list is no surprise to anybody in our part of the world. Manure applications before major rain events, to frozen soils and close to streams, and without incorporation of manure were listed as top reasons. We also asked them what practices the P index should discourage farmers from doing. And the top of the list here, you say manure applications to frozen or saturated soils, the fields close to streams, applications where there is no incorporation of manure, to steep slopes, fields without crops, and at particularly high rates were the main reasons that the planners gave us for wanting to discourage farmers from doing. We asked them the practices that the P index should encourage farmers to engage in, and in that list were practices that mixed manure with soil. So manure incorporation was highly ranked as a practice that could help reduce runoff risk. Manure applications to fields without a direct connectivity to streams and reduction of rates. They also told us that they wanted to see a clear credit to cover crops on those fields and setbacks and buffers more pronounced than the current P-index has. So it is in the current P-index, but it's hidden under erosion. They also mentioned practices to reduce erosion and improve infiltration. So areas for improvement, timing of manure. This came back time and time again. We had a classification in the P-index that says on April 30th, your risk is really high, and on May 1st, it's so much lower. That doesn't make any sense in a changing climate, so they wanted to go away from calendar dates and go more towards field conditions in the new P-index. And then they really said discourage manure applications without incorporations or too saturated fields. And then evaluate a handful of best management practices. The ones that notoriously jumped out were cover crop setbacks and buffers and applications to fields that have residues. So we started looking at the field database that they supplied us with. 33,000 real fields in the state of New York where the P-index was run. We had all the input factors. First glance at the database told us that about 5% of the fields in this entire database has a limitation for phosphorus application based on the P-index. They're either ranked as high or very high in the phosphorus index. Very consistent with a survey we did 3-4 years ago as part of a CERA 17 podium on the phosphorus index as well. So roughly about 5% that gets impacted directly by the P-index scores. Greater recognition that other fields have also considerations for phosphorus management, but not directly impacted by the score. We looked at dissolved phosphorus versus particulate phosphorus and noticed that the dissolved phosphorus tended to exceed the scores for the dissolved phosphorus tended to exceed the scores for the particulate phosphorus index, consistent with the saturation excess dominant flow path that we have in the state of New York. When we looked at the dissolved and particulate P-index, we saw they were mainly driven by the source factor. So the source was overriding a lot of the transport components. Source was much more directly linked to the final phosphorus index score. Transport factor, much less. Within the source factors, soil test P, manure, and fertilizer, we saw that the soil test P was the biggest driver for final P-index scores. So our final P-index scores was very heavily weighted by soil test P levels. Secondary was manure. A close second. Fertilizer, not important at all. And that is very consistent with planner feedback that we got from the survey. Here's one of the quotes. If a field is a low soil test P level, you can apply large amounts of manure, even if the field is right next to a stream. It was well recognized the past 15 years that this was a flaw in our P-index. So well recognized that the planner said, P-index allows me to do this, but I'm not going to recommend it. So, looking at the flow distance itself, the main driver, the transport factors, the main driver was the flow distance. Much higher contribution to the final score than drainage class or flooding frequency or erosion rates or concentrated flows. So flow distance to the stream is a main driver for the transport score. 50 to 60% of the fields are listed as having a long flow distance and therefore low transport score. Okay, so that was a really brief overview of a first analysis of the 33,000 fields. We took the planner feedback with the idea that the planners are the ones that need to work with the farmers to implement best management practices on those fields. We also looked at the distribution and the limitations of our current P-index and basically sat together and said, how can we do this differently and hopefully better? And that's where we came up with a proposal for a new approach to our P-index in the state of New York. I want to preface with the next coming slides. So this is a draft, a very much a draft. So don't come out of this room saying New York is going to do this. We don't know what we're going to do this because I haven't bought the bulletproof vest yet. Here's what we are proposing. The first remark that we got back from the planners was, don't change everything. don't make this starting from scratch, and because we think the PNX actually did a pretty good job. But we think you need to tweak the factors, and you need to, you know, incentivize the cover crops and the setbacks and stuff like that. So first approach was to say we keep the score interpretations the same. So we have the same low, medium, high, very high classifications. We have the same number 100 that says if you're over 100, no more manure to be applied. We focus this entirely on manure. This is under debate right now too internally. Fertilizer does not show up in here at all at the moment. So it's focused entirely on manure applications with the recognition that the planners were telling us it's not the fertilizer that gets us into trouble, it's the manure. We have a soil test as an application cutoff. And you'll see here politics being part of the process as well, two axes. That's because we don't know where that value is. But at some high level, we thought maybe we need to say enough is enough, no more application. Wherever that level is, it's up for debate. If the soil test level is high enough that you cannot apply anymore, that's the end of the story. If it's lower, then we permit application. But it depends on your transport risk. So in this new approach, we're not taking the source and multiplying it times the transport factor. We're looking at the transport first. We're saying, let's look at the landscape. Let's see what is our risk of that phosphorus, if we apply it, of ending up in streams. So we look at the landscape position first. We try to classify that based on a worst-case scenario. Worst case, in this case, you could imagine surface application without any incorporation at a time that there's nothing growing. Okay? Our final score is over 100, no manure application. Over a certain soil test level, no manure application. If you are classified as high for a particular field, it will be phosphorus-based. If you go to medium levels, N-based, if your soil test is below the level in which we still have an agronomic recommendation, in New York that's 40 pounds on the Cornell-Morgan test, if you are between 40 and that theoretical cutoff on the high end, we're saying we don't want to make the soil test any worse, so we're limiting you to phosphorus-based. If it's a low transport risk and you are below our double X cutoff, it is N-based. So start with inherent landscape features, determine a score, and your final recommendation is no manure, phosphorus-based, or nitrogen-based. Now, in the middle of this is a list of BMPs. So if we look at what goes into the transport, it's no different than what we already had, but the two differences, we added vegetative buffer and subsurface tile drainage to our landscape characterization. We add the scores together to come up with our final score. And we assigned classifications and numbers to each of those, meaning that if, for example, your flow distance to a stream is less than 100 feet, you get a higher score than if your flow distance is over 300 feet. And you classify a field based on these components here, you add them all together, and you come up with a raw score. Once you have that raw score, if it's over 100, you cannot apply manure. But you can lower that score by implementing BMPs. And this is the list of BMPs. Looks like a short list. This is what the planner said was really important. We should credit applications that are incorporated. We should credit injection. We should credit setbacks. We should credit application within 1 to 2 weeks of planting. We should credit applications to sods, dormant or active, over applications to bare soil. And we should certainly credit applications to growing fields. So these are multipliers that allow you to lower the score and go from maybe no application to, okay, now I can, but it's P-based, or P-based and now I can, it's N-based. The next steps we have for this is to show a poster here this afternoon. Steve, what time is it?
2:30.
That spells this out in much more detail. We would love to get your feedback on the ideas that we've put together so far on this new proposed phosphorus index, the pros, the cons, the things we need to pay attention to. We are working through our advisory group for the CIG grant, getting their feedback. We have met with all of the folks on our list in New York now. We've had the initial conversations with Pennsylvania. We hope to sit down with Pete today as well, or tomorrow. Talk with Doug and Jen in Pennsylvania and see what they think about this new approach. And with that, we'll wrap it up. question is, what percentage of the soils test below 40? If you would ask me 80, I would say 4 to 5%. I am not sure what the 40 is. We have about 55% of our fields testing below the agronomic critical value. So it is a sizable amount. I don't know exactly what the number is there. Tonia. It is a recognition that at some stage we shouldn't be loading a valuable resource to the land base anymore. It is a big... So in our new approach, we've moved away entirely from the soil test P and categorized it into three. Agronomic recommendations, somewhere between agronomic and some theoretical cutoff, and that has to be consensus-based. It's got to be consensus-based with the planner community. Where that is, I don't know. It might disappear as we go through the review process. So that is another issue of debate. We just had our meeting with DEC, Department of Environmental Protection, that's our conservation, that's our regulator in the state, as to how we combine that. Right now, the table says CAFO regulations will govern when and when not winter applications are allowed. We're working on a document to spell that out with them. This could merge into one generalized PNX approach, and I think DEC would prefer that. So our CAFO permit applies to the large and medium CAFOs only, and then farms of any size that are in sensitive watersheds or get cost sharing from the state. A lot of small farms would not fall under that category. It is totally up for debate right now how we fit those two together, because they should be together. We talked with Doug Beagle last week, 2 weeks ago, about this worst-case scenario. Maybe the worst-case scenario is frozen soil in the winter, and then we credit from there.
All right. Thank you.